The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio, Special Operations Military News, and straight talk with the guys in the community.
Welcome to another wonderful episode of Soft Rep Radio, and I am your host, Rad. But first, before I introduce my next guest, I got to point out that we have a merch store, and if you go to softrep.com, check out the merch store. That's what keeps the lights on, right? That's what keeps it going. These coffee mugs, these shirts you guys are picking up with our names on it and supporting it and tagging us, keep doing that. Also, we have a book club. Something that's a little cooler than the merch store is reading books, okay? So go check out softrep.com/book-club and get in on that. And we might just have our next guest's book in our cycle of over 1,000 books that we have already rotating. And my next guest is Robin Bartlett, and he wrote the book Vietnam Combat, Firefights and Writing History. And I want to welcome him to the show.
Thank you, Rad. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, thank you for reaching out and wanting to be on the show and wanting to tell your story and talk about your book that you've got coming up. I know you have a lot going on, and you've taken the time out to give us some of your insight into Vietnam and really just what's been going on in the 60s, 70s, 80s into today. So with that, I want to introduce you again. What was the rank that you got out as? Second lieutenant?
Well, I went over to Vietnam as a second lieutenant.
That's right.
And then after 1 year, just 1 year, I was promoted to first lieutenant. Huh. And that was the day that I joined my battalion in Vietnam. There were four officers, all the same, roughly the same date of rank. We marched into the battalion commander's office, bunker, I should say, and in alphabetical order. So I went in first. And this lieutenant colonel, who was the battalion commander, was just totally beat. He was totally exhausted. He gave us the two-minute speech, and then asked the S1, the personnel officer, where do we need officers? And he said, the S1 said, we need one in A, two in B, and one in C. So I was assigned to A Company. The three other officers did not complete their tours. They were either killed or wounded. So my first story is the luck of being in alphabetical order and assigned to A Company. So I was the only officer to survive. The other two were, other three were either wounded or killed.
So let me just ask you this, you know, as a young man, how old were you?
22 years old.
And here you are, okay, realizing that you're being pulled in because the other gentlemen that were in your position are no longer doing that position because of the war. What's going through your head right now? Just like, I'm the guy.
Well, you know, part of the reason why I wrote this book is because I had some experiences that were kind of unusual. And I've talked to a lot of vets about and found that I had had some things happen to me that didn't happen to them. And each one of these stories ultimately became a chapter in my book. They're rather unusual stories. Some are horrific and some are really just unbelievable. They're funny and unbelievable.
It's so like life happens and then horrific situation. All of a sudden you're just like walking along and telling a joke and talking about your girlfriend. And the next thing you know, it's combat.
That's pretty much it. Yep.
And you probably dealt with a lot of ambush tactics coming at you being on the ground. Yeah. Tell us about your unit. Tell us who you got, who you're serving with. Let's just dive right into it.
So I went through the ROTC program because, you know, as a military brat, I went to 13 different elementary and middle schools and four different high schools and said, I have had enough of the military. I want no part of it. But in college, it was the height, you know, the war was building and my classmates were being reclassified 1A during the summer months. And I said, well, it looks like I'm going to serve my obligation. I want to serve it as an officer. Mm-hmm. A lot of family tradition in my family. My grandfather went to West Point, father went to West Point, brother went to West Point, all served military careers. But I went through the ROTC program. I turned down an appointment to West Point.
Wow.
And after graduation, I was a distinguished military graduate and just fell naturally into the routine. Volunteered for Airborne Ranger and was assigned to the 82nd Airborne Division. Was there for about 9 months and then transferred to the 101st Airborne Division in Vietnam.
Oh, wow.
When I arrived in Vietnam, it was just after the Tet Offensive of 1968. Mm-hmm. And they said, officer orders are canceled. There have been so many casualties. I was reassigned to the 1st Cav Division. And that turned out to be a wonderful assignment in many ways because the whole air mobile concept was to bring fresh troops to the battle by helicopter. You didn't have to walk, didn't have to hump through the boonies to get to the battle. You went in on helicopters. Mm-hmm. You carried more water, you carried more ammunition, and you flew to the battle. My other colleagues, officers, they carried 70-pound packs. My pack was 45. But the other side of that coin was that sometimes we went into hot LZs.
I was going to say, you're going into the bush. You are like getting dropped into hell's inferno and to extinguish that.
I made more than 50 helicopter combat assaults.
Gosh.
And when it was my platoon's turn to lead the assault, I always rode in the first helicopter. And
just
that was pretty hairy.
Follow me, boys. Here we go.
That was pretty hairy. Even though they would prep the LZ with artillery and we had Cobra helicopters overhead.
Gun runs.
The enemy somehow was able to survive. Now, they liked to let the first helicopter land, but then they'll take out the second one.
Mm-hmm.
And then that would divert the rest of the helicopters from coming into that LZ. They would divert to another LZ landing zone, and the men on the ground had to fight it out on their own.
And those downcopter trying to figure, like, take care of their casualties, take care of themselves, fight this overwhelming number coming from the trees in every direction. I can only imagine from the ground too.
It could be overwhelming, or it could be just a sniper with an LPG.
Taking his shots. I got you. So did you ever encounter so I've heard stories of smoke getting popped and like they say, Roger that, we're coming in for a landing, go ahead and pop your smoke. And they're like, okay, we're popping yellow. And then yellow smoke would pop all over the place. And you guys are like, let's fix this. Let's say we'll identify it. Is that a thing? Am I tripping?
It was the reverse of that. I mean, I never actually had that happen to me, but when the helicopter pilots were coming in to bring supplies they would ask you to pop smoke and then you would tell them that you had popped smoke and they would verify the color. So the enemy would be listening to our radio. So once you said pop smoke, sometimes, you know, they would pop a different color smoke. They had access to
our canisters,
smoke grenades.
Right. From policing up those that left them behind, you know,
And, black market, wherever. I mean, yeah. Supplies were left all over the place.
Exactly. It was just kind of just such a crazy war, you know, and I don't want it to let it be forgotten, and you don't either. And that's why you've written your book, you know, and Vietnam Combat, and you were there. This is what I wanted my listener to know.
I wanted to tell it from a boots on the ground point of view. I mean, I didn't have a 50,000 foot view. I had boots on the ground point of view. I wanted to tell it what it was like to lead 28 men through the jungle. These were draftees, almost all of them were draftees. Mm-hmm. And I was the second oldest man in the platoon, yet responsible for their welfare. And in many cases, giving them orders and direction on what to do and how to do it.
Did you ever come into contact and all of a sudden you have to go for some other weapon because you're jammed or it's out of ammo and you're just like, maybe there's an AK and you grab that? Have you ever swapped out weaponry to just do your mission?
Actually, no, not quite that way. Mm-hmm. We always had superior firepower, but the enemy was incredibly competent. That was one of the misconceptions that we had. We always thought that the VC were, you know, they were citizen soldiers and walking around with a little ball of rice on their hip, mm-hmm. and an AK with one or two magazines. Not true. They were tough soldiers, especially at night. They were the best night fighters around, far superior to what we did. And they had this unique ability. We would hole up for the night and night defensive position, dig foxholes, put out Claymore mines and trip flyers. But they had this uncanny capability of penetrating our wire and penetrating our defensive positions, getting in, throwing hand grenades or satchel charges. And they just had an amazing ability to fight at night. The only times we were successful at night would be when we set up an ambush and they would walk down the trail and we'd blow Claymore mines, which was just an awesome, awesome weapon. But no, I never really had occasion to be that. I only had one occasion where it was close in fighting. Everything else was at
a little 50 bit of a
meters, mm-hmm. 50 meters maybe, mm-hmm. or less.
That's amazing though.
Not hand to hand.
And when you're firing these claymores, they're attached to like a device, like a remote control. That's called what, a clacker. Is that right?
Yeah. It's like almost looks like a handheld,
vice grip.
Yeah. It's like a stapler.
Yeah.
And there's about a 75 foot wire that goes out to the claymore mine, 300 steel balls in a semicircle. And we plant two or three of them in front of us. You fire those suckers and it would go out in a cone, 6 inches or a foot off the ground, mm-hmm. 6 feet in the air, and in a cone 300 meters wide, nothing survived.
All these ball
absolutely
bearings.
Nothing survived.
Just flying out. Boom. Yep. And it says front towards enemy on those. So for my listener or my viewer, if you're not sure, that's the one. It's
very
the
important.
Stick it in, point it away from yourself, and make sure it's still pointed away from you.
Very important.
Yep. Jeez, 75 feet. You are close. That is danger close. Yep.
The back blast wasn't much. It was all going out toward the front.
Interesting ingenuity that we have to try.
That was an amazing resource that we had available. That and artillery. I shot a lot of artillery. I got good at shooting artillery, man. Let me tell you.
Well, you want to know what's going on in 1968? There's two things that I learned about 1968. One, the Big Mac was invented in 1968. Okay. I just want to say to my listener, the Big Mac. Okay. So while the Big Mac tonight's coming out on the market, he's in Nam. And then also, Jumpin' Jack Flash from the Rolling Stones was number one album. And that's where you start getting like Paint It Black. You get all these songs that are so synonymous with Vietnam in movies that they use from the Stones. So I thought it was relevant to say what was going on in 68 while you were there in 68. You know, it's just the things going on in the U.S. Everybody's still trying to live and you're in there planting claymores and the Big Mac is coming out on the market.
That's right.
Do you remember your first Big Mac?
It was a long time after that before I saw the first Big Mac.
Yeah, right.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Did you have any like USO shows where any like, you know, Anne Margaret or anybody showed up and did a dance or anything like that?
Where I was with the 1st Cav Division was up in I Corps. That's right along the demilitarized zone in the northern part of South Vietnam. And we operated from the Gulf of Tonkin on the east. So you had sandy soil, tumbleweed, no overhead cover, all the way to the Laotian border, which was three canopy jungle. And we were in a free fire zone. There were no friendlies, especially toward the Laotian border. We were trying to prevent infiltration movement from the Ho Chi Minh Trail.
Mm-hmm.
So frankly, anything, I only encountered friendlies on one occasion. And that was when we were in a blocking force around a village and that was being searched by Arvin troops. Otherwise, we were in a free fire zone. And if we encountered anything or anyone, we killed it.
Well, will you say what Arvin stands for my, do you remember that?
Oh yeah. Army of the Republic of Vietnam. Those that's were right. South Vietnamese soldiers.
And I Corps, man, that's a word that Radar O'Reilly used on MASH. Let me get I Corps on the phone. I Corps on the phone. So you're just
Yeah. And depending upon where we were, it was like three different wars. You could have sandy soil, incredible heat, 105, 110 degrees. We had to be very careful about men staying hydrated. And it was not uncommon, even with experienced soldiers, for men just to be walking with us and keel over from heat exhaustion.
Right.
Happened to me once.
Oh, it's just total heat casualty.
Heat casualties.
And 100%.
And then you had a medevac. You had casualty and you had to get them out of there.
And it's real, you know, fevers and over. It's just, you know, what can you do to the body when it's burned out like that?
Right.
And you are a casualty of the war.
Yep.
Dang. Holy
it happened
cow.
To me on one occasion. I started having leg cramps and I had drunk all the water I had. I carried 2 gallons of water, but it was so hot and so humid. I drank all the water. I took my salt pills. Those were the days they thought salt pills would help you. Just got incredible leg cramps and I had to be medevaced.
Did you ever, as an officer, did you ever have to sign some paperwork to like give somebody an accommodation that they had done some act of valor in combat? And do you remember what that might have been?
I was a comparative literature major in college. And so they found out very quickly that I was a good writer.
Yes.
So the answer is every time we needed to have a citation written, I got the job.
Okay. Because you could type. Huh? Could you type? Could you type?
Could write.
Oh, you could write. And really, it's really, yeah.
I rarely got close to a typewriter, but I wrote them out on paper.
And as you're writing these out with your eloquent style as an English, you know, savant, I'm going to call you that. What was going through your mind when you're reading, like, young Joe, Private Joe here had stormed them hill and deserves this, and he lost his life. I mean, what's going on, you know?
Well, you know, the people I was writing up were the men in my own platoon who had been involved in actions that I had been involved with. So I could reconstruct the actions in the territory and the discussion of what that soldier had done, as well as the posthumous write-ups that I had to write on occasion as well.
And I just want to touch on that because, you know, it is a part of the whole situation. You know, these young men and young women who gave their lives deserve to have that noted in our halls of history, if you will. Okay. So love that you wrote that. They probably love it eloquently as well to this day.
Try to. It was not an easy task, especially if you had a KIA killed in action. It was the officer's job to the soldiers. They would bring the body back, but they didn't want to be involved in the preparation of the body to go back home. That was the officer's job. And my medic would give me a death card. It was basically a 3x5 card with a hole punched in it, a piece of string. You fill out that card, and for the first time, we actually recorded the coordinates as best as we could as to where that soldier had been killed. So we kept, I don't know where that data ended up, but mm-hmm. they tried to record exactly where that soldier had died. And you attach the card to the boot along with one dog tag. The other dog tag remained around his neck. And it was my job to go through the pockets, make sure there was nothing that shouldn't be there, remove any personal effects. Then we didn't have body bags, but we had ponchos. Mm-hmm. I would wrap the man in the poncho. But, you know, these choppers, when they came in, a lot of rotor wash. So I had a ball of twine, and I would tie off the poncho around the head, waist, and feet so that the poncho wouldn't flop around. Mm-hmm. And then we'd call in a helicopter to come in and begin the journey back home.
Well, thank you for that. And on behalf of them, right? Thank you. And for that person you're thinking about right now, I mean, you can say their name if you want to, but thank you. You know,
tried to do it with respect every time that it happened. Mm-hmm. And it did happen to me a number of times. It was not easy. Mm-mm. I guess my men were a little superstitious about doing it because they thought, well, maybe it would be me the next time. So,
oh, I see. But if you keep doing it, then you have a job to do to keep doing it. And they're like, they're going to fight for you, but you keep doing it. Okay. Oh, what a job, huh? Here you are going through ROTC, and now you're, doing that detail. And where in the manual does it teach you to do all of that, right? No, where does it teach you to get the twine? Where does it teach you to about the rotor wash? And so here you are trying to be so ceremony, you know, respectful to these fallen, and you got rotor wash, and you got, you know, back to action, back to the jungle.
Yeah. Some of that I learned in Ranger School. Oh. Ranger School was the best training that the Army had to offer. It was the best insurance policy for a new lieutenant. And Ranger School took us to the point of physical and mental exhaustion and hunger, because if you didn't make your objective, they didn't feed you. And then at that point, when you reached that point, that's when they made you the leader and put you to the test to lead the patrol. So there was really never once in Vietnam that I did not feel in control of a situation. Now, I was scared to death, no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. When the bullets fly, you are scared. But I always, that training instilled in me a sense of a tremendous confidence that lives with me to this day. My wife tells me, your greatest strength is that you are fearless, and your greatest weakness is that you are fearless.
Right.
But that comes from Ranger School. It was the best training the Army had to offer. Now, SEAL training, I admit, I will go on record to say that that was tougher. I didn't go through it, but I know it was tougher physically. But Ranger School demanded a lot from us, both physically and mentally, mm-hmm. planning the operations, writing an operation plan, and executing it.
Would you say you're being kind of groomed in a Green Beret fashion as a ranger to see if you could be pulled into the next echelon upwards at the time?
If I had stayed in the Army, that would be the direction that I probably would have pursued.
Because your glasses that you're wearing right now are totally Green Beret style, you know, officer glasses, sir.
That's true. And I have sunglasses just like yours.
So. I love it. And I thought I'd give you the flair of the 60s and 70s, baby. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So here we are, 68, 69. Rolling Stones are in the background playing some music. You're moving. There's smoke popped everywhere. It's just, tell me something. What are you feeling? You know, like you got a unit with you. You're on the trail. What are you looking for?
Well, when I came into my unit, I did something that I think was allowed me to survive my tour, because the life expectancy of a lieutenant, a platoon leader, was 90 days.
Right.
I got wounded twice, but I did survive. Why? One thing was I tried really hard not to do anything stupid. It was easy to do stupid stuff over there, but I worked hard at trying not to do stupid things. Secondly, I sat down with my platoon sergeant and my squad leaders, and I said, listen, you know more about what's going on here than I do. You've had more experience, more in field. So I want your advice. I want you to tell me if you think I'm doing something that's wrong. And I want your advice. Now, I didn't always take it, but I established that rapport. And the other thing that happened after a period of time is that, you know, officers in Vietnam were measured by body count. That was the metric by which junior officers and senior officers were measured. But I suspect I never would have been a really great commander, because after a period of time, the welfare of my men became more important to me than body count. For example, if my point man alerted, he would call me forward and I'd talk to him, and he says, sir, they didn't call me sir. My name was 1-6. You didn't call anybody sir. You never saluted. There was no insignia. The only way you knew I was an officer is it said LT Bartlett on my camouflage band cover. That was it. So he would say, I got a bad feeling about what's in front of us. I don't hear any monkeys. I don't hear any birds. And I respected that. And I trusted my point men. I also got really good at firing artillery. I was great. In fact, I shot so much artillery that the battery that supported us got to know my call sign. And I would do what was called reconnaissance by fire, meaning I would shoot artillery in front of where we were going to be walking through. And they actually ended up putting a budget on me of 25 rounds. That's the most I could shoot.
Yeah.
But when we walked through that area, my men felt protected. You know, at least we had put a lot of artillery out in front of us before we walked through.
You're giving them the best opportunity in the situation to move through that, to live. They're looking at you like, all right, because you have a job to do, and we don't want you to do that to any of us. That's the job they want you to have to do. They don't want it to be done. So blast that. Yeah.
They wanted to know that their welfare was foremost in my mind over body count.
Yes. And obviously, I mean, for the situation, I'm not trying to make light of war, okay? But when you're in it and you're doing your job as told, you're just clearing a path for your men to move through the fight. And so, you know, as we just talked about previously, you know, in your book, it talks about war and, you know, being trained to lead and like born to kill. You know, it's just this thing. And then you get out. And do you ever look back and feel like there's an atrocity situation that happened in Vietnam? Can I ask you that? Do you feel like, you know, what's your thoughts looking back today to then? I know you went, my dad went, you know, the whole nine yards. What's your thoughts?
Well, I was there at the height of the war, 68, 69. And that was well before the Cali atrocities and some of the other things that happened. And the whole character of the war changed as you hit 70 and 71, 72, because the American soldiers figured out that this was not a war we were going to be able to win. But when I was there, it was still on the cusp of transition from we can win this, we're going to prevent communism. Taking over the South, and
that's right.
We're defenders of the faith, defenders of democracy. But once 70s came into effect, that whole attitude changed, and American soldiers, nobody wanted to die for a tie, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you know, so, you know, there's got to be another cause, right? Could have maybe let the French fight it out, or could have let the Japanese and the Vietnamese fight it out when they originally ticking off each other in the beginning, and then the French were there, and then they called us up to come in, you know, in the 50s, late 50s, to come and try to help, even early 50s, right? Like, we were there like 51, 55, you know, and then all of a sudden you get JFK saying, we need a special warfare, we need to have, that was like in 52, 53, he's like, Green Berets.
Yep.
And the British were like, take our Green Beret. We're like, okay. No, I love it. I love the whole story. I know, when I think about how sneaky the enemy could be. It reminds me of the movie with John Wayne in the movie The Green Beret, and he's sitting there talking to him. And he's like, you never know where the enemy's at. And then all of a sudden, it's got a little dude with an RPG crawl through his wire while they're sitting there talking to him in the daylight.
Yep.
In the daylight.
It was a pretty amazing time. You know, I had 90% of my platoon were draftees. Mm-hmm. My platoon sergeant was supposed to be the most experienced man in the unit. They usually have, 10 years of experience, but mine went through the instant NCO program, and he had his 19th birthday.
Oh, my goodness.
So here was supposed to be the most experienced man in the unit, and he and I had about the same level of experience in terms of leadership and being able to handle these soldiers.
You guys are rock, paper, scissoring it together. Okay, one, two, three. All right. Right. Now.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow the Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
So that's like an FNG type of thing. And you talk about in your book, fucking new guy, freaking new guy in the field. You know, here you are, lieutenant, you're being coiled up to go over there. You're meeting a bunch of draftees who are, having to go. Like, how did you do it? Like, how'd you guys all, did they look at you like, smell you a little bit? Or were they like, what's up, doc?
We smelled pretty good because we would be out in the field for 4 to 6 weeks at a time and no showers. You had enough water to drink and occasionally brush your teeth. That was it. So unless you got a monsoon rain and then you showered off real quick, you could wash a little bit.
Sure.
But your clothes would stand up on their own after about 4 weeks. But these men were draftees. But we were all in it together. We were all, I ate the same food. I wore the same clothes. I got just as dirty.
Right.
But when the bullets started to fly, if you were in a firefight, everybody immediately hit the ground. But you could, as the leader, you could actually feel the eyes of 28 men on you saying, okay, give us some direction.
Right.
Give us an order. What do you want us to do? Stop hugging the ground. And praying, take action, right or wrong. And sometimes it wasn't right, but it was better to give orders and take the steps necessary to combat the situation.
A decisive decision has to be made and then deal with it and make it.
That came from Ranger School. That was the training we got in Ranger School.
You got to make a decision.
You mentioned John Wayne, but John Wayne never served in the military.
No, he didn't.
But his comment, courage is being scared to death, but saddling up anyway.
Yeah.
That was the true grit of an officer, of a leader of a small unit in Vietnam. That's what you had to do.
You know, about John Wayne real quick, he was filming the Green Beret and he got to go overseas and work with a unit for like 3 weeks, an SF unit. And they just kept him inside the FOB, the forward operating base, didn't want to let him go outside the wire. And they're like, one day it was like, let's go on a mission. And he's like, can I go with you? And let me just do it. I'm good, guys. And they're like, you don't tell us how to do our job and we won't tell you how to act. And that's that, right? I mean, all the way to that point, he thought he could go out with them and set claymores.
Yeah, he was an amazing actor, amazing person.
Right.
And the soldiers just loved the guy, absolutely loved him. I mean, I can remember being at Travis Air Force Base waiting for the flight to go over.
I've been there.
Sure. Everybody was singing that song. I mean, they kept playing it on the jukebox again and again.
All the time. Oh, my dad would play it around the house and I'd listen to it in the armory in the 80s. It's like, you know, growing up in a Green Beret culture and the Ranger style of life, you know, it's just what it is, man. But you were one of those that went on to get the Ranger and commission and have that confidence instilled in you from the confidence course. And let me paint a scenario for you. Okay. So I do war games in Utah. I do large scale war games and we set up ambushes and all this stuff, do night operations. And so here we are in the mountains and I've got probably 40, 60 people out in the field and we're playing till about 2 a.m, but I'm stalking somebody and we're good at it. We're doing it and we're stalking. We hear the movement. We hear them brushing through it. And out of nowhere, before we thought we were going to engage them, a deer just bolts right out in front of us, a deer. So we use airsoft guns, which are non-lethal. And I'm sitting here with this BB gun and this deer. And I'm like, this deer could like, you know, deer boy me to death. And I'm just out here. What am I doing? I have a BB gun. So funny story. That's funny. It's fun and it's funny. Have you ever had a situation in Nam where it was like you're in an ambush and there's jungles all around you? Any tigers, lions, or bears?
Well, I had two interesting occasions like that. One was, again, your point man's out in front of you about 50 meters, and they passed the word back to have me come to the front. And as I got up close to the point man and the cover man, I noticed they're lying on the ground and behind cover. And here I'm walking down the trail, I immediately sort of went down to a duck walk.
Oh, yeah.
And here in front of me, walking up the trail, was an enemy soldier about 50 feet away, maybe 75 feet away. And he's got his rifle on his shoulder, and he's looking at me, and I'm looking at him. So I have my weapon in my hand. I had an AR-15, not an M-16. And I flip it to full automatic, and we carried 20 magazines with 18 rounds in a magazine, and that weapon would fire 18 rounds in 2.5 seconds. 2.5 seconds. You didn't even have to aim. You just pointed it. And it rode from the lower left to the upper right. Mm. And that's exactly, the weapon performed exactly as it's supposed to. And the bullets just traced a path from the lower left to the upper right. And this soldier fell dead.
Oh, wow. Different kind of animal.
But the point man had alerted, heard this man coming up the trail, and they called me up to the front. But I'm looking at them, and they're on the ground behind cover, and I'm just
staring at this guy. So they didn't even know exactly where he was, but you're just eyes to eyes with him.
And that's right.
Got the draw.
That's right.
Holy
cow. And he had his weapon on his shoulder, and I had mine in my hands ready to go.
Yeah, he wasn't ready with it. He had it slung up, and you were just carrying it.
Yep.
You're like, what's up?
That's the way we can't. We never put our weapons on our shoulder. We never slung our weapons. We always carried them. Now, we kept it on safe. The only man who was allowed to have it on full auto was the point man. Everybody else had to have their weapon on safe, loaded with rounds in the chamber, but on safe.
You and know,
of course,
my dad,
occasionally, the point man would trip and fall and pull the trigger, and everybody would hit the ground, which is scary. And the word got passed back. It's okay. It's okay. Just he tripped. It's all right. No problem.
So is that something through like special training that they talk about that? Cause my dad also talked about like never having a sling and always carrying it around the ring, you know, just like always on a march or whatever. He's never slinging it. And never. He says, if it's not in your hand, it's not ready. That's what he said. Yeah.
That's right.
That's right. Huh?
The other interesting occasion, going back to your question, was, I came up with this very creative idea with our mortar platoon to set out trip flares in a saddle between two hilltops that were about a kilometer away. We happened to have a night defensive position, NDP, and we could oversee these two hilltops with a saddle in between. We had a direct line of sight. It was unusual. And I came up with this wonderful idea to sight in the mortar on the hill, on the saddle, and we walked out and put trip flares right along the saddle because it was a natural point for the enemy to come through.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a man stay up. You know, we had guards awake and alert all night long. And all of a sudden, about 2 o'clock in the morning, one of the trip flares goes off. And we started pumping mortar rounds down the tube, everything we had. So the next morning, we went out to look at the area where all the mortar rounds landed. We ended up killing about 3 gazelles.
3 gazelles tripped your flare. Oh, wow. Bad day for the gazelles.
Yep.
Good thing they only give you 25 rounds. I know it's a mortar. It's totally different. Not artillery.
No, this was a mortar.
Yeah, you had plenty of those.
Six or eight rounds, that's all we could shoot. That's all we could carry. I mean, they would bring in supplies to us every night by helicopter and then come in the morning and put it back on the chopper.
And just reload you that way. Huh? That was air
cav. Couldn't carry that much weight.
Wow. So that's the cowboy hat, guys, with the rope around their hat, right? First calf.
I have a hat like that. It's sitting right over here next to me.
That's legit. No, that's, yeah, you're what movies are made of. I have to say that, you know. And do you find any movies out there that you've seen? Can you muster it, or do you just move on from those?
I kind of move on from them.
Yeah.
I can't. Many of them had parts that were very well performed, were well done.
Yeah.
You always look at things like the uniform and how clean it was and whether there were any patches on it and whether they were wearing their helmets and whether the helmet had camouflage on them. And there were a number of things that are immediate giveaways, you know, mostly how clean the uniforms were.
Right.
We were not clean. We were dirty.
It's the little things like in Rambo, my dad would always say at the end of it, they would all die. I'm like, why? He's like, well, the RPG in the helicopter, when he shoots the helicopter down, it'll blow all the POWs away in the back because he holds up this RPG in Rambo, you know? And it's like, whew. My dad would always just say as he'd look over at the TV, oh, yeah, they'd all die. A little 12-year-old me learning, you know, the little things. It's the little things. It's the little things.
It is.
But today, you have TV shows that are using airsoft guns, like what I work with, to use in these movies and use them to, you know, society, the real gun aspect. And they're a lot more cost effective, less lethal, first and foremost, and they look the same. So Hollywood, hit me up.
Yes, it is.
And hit up my man, Robin, too, please. Do you have a movie coming out or anything? What's going on?
No, I'm just working to try and promote my book and get people to read it and buy it. So that, you know, my publisher is actually in the UK, Casemate Publishers, and they did a beautiful job on the cover. I'm very, very happy with the cover and the design. They included a lot of photographs in the book, and I was very, very pleased with the production. But their marketing department here in the U.S. is a small operation. So, and I come from a publishing background, so.
So right here, I know I'm not the fanciest, you know, it's me and you and we're doing the show and I got my phone up, but you can see on the cover right here, it's the back of the first calf patch on the helmet. And then out the door, probably the gunner's door there, you've got a column of all of these Hueys, probably just going whoop, 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 whoop. And he's got the book right there. Yeah, show that. So, oh yeah, Vietnam combat.
Now, you do know that first calf patch was added to the back of the helmet. All the chopper pilots did have various different stickers and things on the backs of their helmets, but mostly it was ID. I had that added.
Oh, yeah, right, because you just wanted to make that a point.
Yes, sure.
You know,
sure.
I mean, you got to be. Why not? And they probably love it, I'm sure. You
they
know.
Do.
Oh, yeah, 100%. This has got to be huge with the first calf. First calf shout out.
Instantaneous. They know, yeah.
We're showing it off right here. SoftRep.com, Rad and Robin, talking about first calf, baby, all day. Look at that column of Hueys in that picture. You guys got to go check out this book, Vietnam Combat, Firefights and Writing History, Robin Bartlett. You know, there's so many reviews. everybody's talking good about it. Can you get it locally? Is it online? What are we going to do with it? How are we going to get it?
You can get it at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It's in a lot of bookstores. You can also buy it off my website, which is www.robinbartlettauthor.com.
And Robin,
I'll autograph it.
Robinbartlettauthor.com. And we'll have that put on the website down below our our conversation here. So when folks that might be reading it, they can just tap on that. So we'll make sure that that goes right to your link so that it gets that.
And they'll get an autographed copy with free shipping and save $13 off the cover price. How about that?
Yes. And you're supporting, local, if you will.
That's right.
Local American. And also, it's out of England. Your publisher, give them a shout out again. And thanks for believing in you to write your story. And whoever took the, a lot of folks are like, how do I write a book? How can I get published? How can I? You've done it. Is there something that you can maybe give my listener who might be there? Let's say they've written something. Let's say they've gone and they've written something and they don't know what to do with it. What's your advice for somebody?
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
The one thing that helped me the most was that I had a college classmate who was with me in Vietnam, but his wife, also a college classmate, was just an incredible proofreader. Mm-hmm. She went through that manuscript, caught every misplaced comma, every misspelled word, and asked a whole ton of WTF questions. And I figured if she didn't understand what I was talking about, I needed to rewrite.
Sure.
So that was probably the most important thing that I did. And I also demilitarized it, defined every acronym, every term.
I love that.
And I had some people read it, a couple of women, and she said, and they told me that, I guess you just want to sell this to the military, right? And I said, no, I want this to appeal to general readers too. Mm-hmm. I want people to understand about the war. And they said, well, you need to add more of yourself, more of your emotions into the book. And I remember that my mother had saved every letter that I wrote home, over 100 letters. And she kept them in the envelope, so they were all date stamped. And I put them in chronological order and reread every letter that I wrote home. And I reached in and I grabbed snippets of the letters and I put them into appropriate chapters. Mm-hmm. So you could read that. You could read what I wrote about what happened, and then you could read what I wrote home about. And they weren't always quite the same story.
Mm-hmm. I'm okay, Mom. Helped. Everything's good. I love you. Don't worry.
I know I haven't written for a while, but by the way, I was wounded, but I never told him.
No, you didn't tell him until you got home or what?
No, I never told them. And the way they found out is I sent a box of stuff home and it had my Purple Heart in it. Oh. And that's how they found out that I had been wounded.
The enemy's marksmanship badge, or as my father called it. He's like, I don't want that. Yeah.
The only award that's awarded by the enemy.
That's right. He's like, I don't need it. I don't want it. You don't want it. That's what he would tell me. Don't ever want that.
Nope.
It's like, how come you don't have a Purple Heart? Little me and all the little questions, you know, but now I'm 45-year-old me and he's up above, with my mom. So like I said, I love to immortalize my dad, and my mom in here. Cause you know, we want to keep their names going. So John and Vicky Radel out there forever right now. See, like, just like that. You're a good dude, Robin, and a good dude, sir. I give you that salute, sir. And, you know, what's your hobbies today? How are you just, writing another book? Or are you just going to go surfing?
Well, I still work full time.
Okay.
I actually work for my college and I call senior alumni and I try and get them to pony up dollars for the college. So that's what I do on a part-time basis. And I'm very active. I'm actually thinking about writing another book, but I want to write it as a fiction account.
Oh.
One of the best books I've ever read is by Carl Milantes, Matterhorn.
Okay.
It is the finest, probably the, now he was a Marine, so I have to give him a little bit of a hard time there, but it's one of the finest books I've read. And he's written two nonfiction books, which did pretty well, but his Matterhorn went to the moon.
Sure.
And I think it's because it was a fictionalized account. And that's what I have in mind. Once I finish the promotion of this book, I've got a lot more stories in me and I'd like to go back, but I believe in embellishment a little bit, maybe here sure. or there, right?
Sure. You could have a big beard and be a second lieutenant in Vietnam and look like me. You could be me in Vietnam right now. Go ahead. Cast me. It's okay. I'll be your, I'll play you. I'll do that. Just give me those glasses. Where's mine at? I wanted to give you my eyes right here so you could see them. They're there. I just wanted you to know. Let me put these back on though. See, that's how you should look in Nam right here. There you
that's
go.
That's right. Well, if you look at one of the pictures in my book, I'm wearing those glasses.
I love it.
I call it my badass photograph.
Ooh, all right. That's Elvis, baby. I got to give it to the king and hail to him. These yep. are the Elvis shades. You know, I met my wife wearing these 23 years ago. This is not just a thing. I got sucked into it. I thought, who's cool? Elvis.
Absolutely.
Aviator He's glasses, man. Brother. He's just like king. What you're wearing. He's the king. He is. Yep. If only his colonel would have let him go travel to England. I never, until I saw Elvis, I never knew that he was confined to Vegas like that.
Huh. I didn't know that either.
You didn't know? No, he was trapped like a lion in the zoo. His colonel was like, oh, it's too dangerous for you to travel, Elvis. He's like, but they want me over there. He's like, but it's too dangerous because he didn't want to go because, oh, you got to watch that movie. Have you not seen the Elvis movie?
No, I haven't seen that. I'll have to watch it.
Please do that. Okay. Okay. I had no idea Elvis was trapped. The Beatles were like, come over. And he's like, why can't I go over? And they're like, it's too dangerous. They offered him like $4 million. He didn't know that. His manager's like, denied it. Just kept him at the Vegas casino, man.
Yeah.
You know, Elvis wanted to come visit. Another veteran right there. Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, baby. When you write your book, I'd love to have you on again. If you're going to write something out or you do come up with something that's fiction or nonfiction, I think my point, what I was going to say is when it comes to nonfiction and when I've interviewed folks who have written nonfiction, there's a little bit of a scare thing when they have to write something that's real.
Yep.
Like, how am I going to write this? You know, who wants to read data?
Well, I was raising a family. Mm-hmm. It took me 10 years to write this book.
Sure.
Because I was raising a family and I had a job that took me on long airplane flights. So that's when I wrote. I would whip out my laptop as long as it wasn't too bumpy and I'd work on a chapter. And my favorite author is Stephen King. And he talks about, in a book called On Writing, he talks about falling into the typewriter. And by that he means you become so engrossed in the story you're writing that you block out everything that's going on around you.
Mm-hmm. You see it.
And that's what would happen to me. I would be so involved in writing this chapter and recalling what happened that it was just amazing how much detail my mind could bring back. I would come away from some of these writing events just sweating with perspiration on my face and recalling the events. I could see the colors. I could smell the smells. It was pretty amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah, you were just, it was vivid. You were just there. It was almost like out of body experience.
Really,
100%. You're really passionate, emotional about it. And I think you're going to put that right into your writings. And I don't think you should have a problem writing a fiction book. It should be probably pretty fun. I think you want to do it.
I got to work on some technique, but that's the next goal that I have for my writing.
I love that. And so since you are a Stephen King fan, you said that, right?
Oh yeah. I've read every one of his books. And I just saw Boogeyman. So I just
want to let you know, I'm not trying to boast or brag, but I have a little Stephen King something for you. So he's born in September 21st. I was also born on September 21st. Okay. But I also play Andy McGee in Firestarter to the Firestarter for Stephen King.
Oh, that's cool.
Okay. So in the series for Sci-Fi Channel, I have telepathy. She starts fires. Her mom and I met in the Lot 6 experiment, you know, and then we become one. And then we're the only two survivors out of the experiment. And then we marry each other, have her, and Charlie goes off and starts fires with her mind. And then the series, I was picked up as the reoccurring Andy McGee through all of her flashbacks and all these demons that she dealt with her fire starting. So she gets hot and bothered later in life. It's kind of interesting. So
very cool.
Yeah. That was with Dennis Hopper, Malcolm McDowell, Danny Nucci from Titanic. I have to say that, you know, he was like Leonardo's buddy that was stuck down below. No. So, yeah.
Well, I have an interesting set of dates as well. You know, the tour in Vietnam was 365 days. And I went over on May the 9th, 1968. And you couldn't determine exactly when you came back. But I actually came back on May the 9th, 1969, 1 year to the day. It just happened that way. My wife was born on May the 9th. My youngest son was born on May the 9th. And I have played those numbers in every possible combination to try to win something. Never won a nickel.
Let's see, what's going on in August at your house? Is it your birthday?
May.
No, yeah, I know. Well, May's the birthday.
You can tell when we were on vacation.
Yeah. Yes. I'm like, wait a second here. So you're trying to figure out the numbers. I'm like, let's go back 9 months. All my kids are born in October. So you know it's cold here in Utah in January, at my house. Because 9 months later, my kids, all of them are October.
My oldest was born in May, and my second son was born in April, but he came early. So, yeah, May is my month.
Yeah, May is your month. 9 months before, that's your month, homie. Now, I've taken about an hour of our time to talk, and I loved it, and I've had a great time, and I hope you had a great time being here and talking with me just about everything, life in general, and a great candid conversation. I just want to drop your book again. It's Vietnam Combat, Firefights, and Writing History by my wonderful friend and guest here, Robin Bartlett, the author, veteran, and father, and
I want to add one final note.
Tell me.
You know, it's very common these days to say to a veteran, thank you for your service. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with saying that. But Vietnam veterans now are starting to walk in the boots of Korean War and World War II veterans. They're all up there in their high 90s and hundreds. So if you want to acknowledge the service of a Vietnam veteran, the code words are welcome home.
100%.
And if you say welcome home to a Vietnam veteran, it's a game changer. You will see them stop in their tracks. Tears to their eyes, lumps in the throat. It makes a big difference. Nothing wrong with thank you for your service.
No, but
welcome home is the code word.
I could not agree with you more. And honestly, I say the same exact thing. And I was going to tell you, welcome home.
You are
for sure. I know it was tough and it wasn't a wanted thing. And it was a very different time than we live in Iraq and Afghanistan. Everybody coming home after 9/11 and everybody's like these big, huge greetings. So from me, for my father and my welcome home to yourself and,
thank you.
You know, and to my listener, welcome home to you as well. And we do welcome you home. And, you know, you can hit me up on Instagram if you want to say hi. I'm cool like that. Whoever's out there. All right. So
sounds cool.
With that said, I'm going to close out one more time with Robin's book. Okay. Which is Vietnam Combat, Firefights and Writing History. And you can check it out, Google it, find it online. You can check softrep.com. We could try to get it in the merch, not our merch, but our book club.
Be happy to.
Okay, yep. We'll work something out. I'll get Guy to get involved, and we'll try to get you in the book club.
I'd be glad to.
And, you know, we'll have you back on, and we can talk more Vietnam, more
I got more stories.
100%. That's it. That's it. I got no problem with that. And we'll dive right into it. I'm not trying to be those podcasts that take 50 minutes to get in 10 minutes at the end of the juice. That's why we went right at it. So thank you for your stories.
Thank you.
All right. And it's been Thanks a pleasure.
Okay.
On behalf of Robin Bartlett, and my name is Rad, saying peace.
You've been listening to Soft Rep Radio.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350+ live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s. Dance away with hip-hop beats and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.